Welcome to the Living the Dream podcast with Curveball. If you believe, you can achieve. Welcome to the Living the Dream with Curveball podcast, a show where I interview guests that teach, motivate, and inspire. Today, we're going to be talking about scaling businesses and network optimization as I am joined by the CEO of Big Leaf, Greg Davis. Greg has been on the board of directors of Big Leaf for 3 years, ever since 2020. He has 25 years of tech leadership experience. He even told me in the green room that he ran a cybersecurity company, and he has a record of scaling businesses. So, Greg, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much, Curtis. It's nice to be here and nice to see you.
Why don't you start off by telling everybody a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure thing. So, Greg Davis, I'm the CEO of Big Leaf Networks, which is an internet optimization business that's headquartered in Portland, Oregon. I've been an operator in private equity backed businesses for the last 20 years. I live in Houston. I got associated with Big Leaf by way of an investor that I had worked with in the past. I got put on the board and I started running day-to-day operations for Big Leaf about two years ago. Prior to that, as we mentioned, I've done other businesses. I was in online ordering and point of sale financial services for the hospitality industry for 4 years before this with a business called HungerRush. And then prior to that, as I mentioned to you, I ran AlertLogic, which was a cybersecurity company, a very fast growing hyperscale cybersecurity company. That me and a couple of guys ran from 2009 until 2018. And then prior to that, I was in the hosting industry. So primarily I'm an operator. I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm not, the most innovative person in the world, if you will, as it relates to, building businesses. I'm an operator. I come in, build efficiencies, build scale. And that's really where I've spent my career. And I'm having a blast doing this for Big Leaf right now. I love the customer base. I love the company. And it's a very simple value proposition that does a lot of good for folks.
Okay, so for those who don't know, explain to the listeners what your company does and what is internet optimization.
Yeah, so think about it this way. The way that we consume services and the way that we interact with, just think of it as the distribution endpoint. And the distribution endpoint could be where we pick up a pizza, where we get our haircut, where we go to get a dermatology image, if you will. It's not necessarily brick and mortar, but it's the endpoint of the line. And so what's changed dramatically about that, think about scheduling a haircut. In today's world, we use cloud applications and we're engaging both in terms of the way that we schedule, in terms of the way that we order, and in terms of the way that we pay. All of that has moved through digital channels, and that has accelerated dramatically over the, since the pandemic, certainly over the last 4 or 5 years. Look at things like DoorDash. Well, that changes the operating posture of these businesses. So they've gone from direct interaction to customers and analog or voice lines to do business to largely a digital environment. And all of that is being facilitated over the internet. Well, not much has changed in the internet. We'll use sports clips as an example. If you open a sports clip in a shopping center, the internet connection that you get in that shopping center hasn't changed very much. However, the leverage and how we use that internet circuit has changed dramatically. And so now all of a sudden the heartbeat of an entire business runs on an internet circuit. And we're dependent on whatever's available in whatever shopping center, whatever distribution endpoint anywhere in the country. There's a lot of variability there. So what Big Leaf does is we have a router, essentially a box, that takes multiple connections from the internet. So perhaps that same shopping center internet connection is now coupled with a wireless connection or a satellite connection or a Wi-Fi connection. And so what we do is we provide quality of service so that I can guarantee you that that dermatology image that's taken in a remote part of Texas, for instance, or Southern Oregon, where the doctors might be in Portland, but the patient might be at, in a very remote area. That happens a lot here in Texas along the Gulf Coast. So what we can do is guarantee the quality of that image over what amounts to be a public circuit, number one. So, and we do that because we have a backbone network and we're able to take that traffic and put it in a position to where, we can manage the shortest, fastest, highest quality path. The second thing that we do, which is super important and really a core part of our value proposition, it's the ability to fail over. So you and I are in this conversation right now. I can press a button and cut the internet circuit that we're talking on now, move over to another internet circuit without you missing a beat with respect to the tone of my voice or more specifically, the quality of an image. Now, again, I go back to the dermatology image because that's such a sensitive use case. And so the first thing obviously is quality. The second thing is failover. And then the third kind of leg of the stool is we provide prioritization of that traffic. So you might have, a large environment where, let's say, a lawyer is giving a deposition to a client. That's a very expensive engagement. You're paying lawyers, that kind of thing. Someone else on the same internet circuit might be playing a digital game or downloading some type of content. And so, absent some type of management and control mechanism at the endpoint, that the internet, if you will, doesn't know, or your systems don't know which traffic is more important than the other. So, for instance, in my home right now, our conversation would take prioritization over, my daughter watching Netflix, for instance. And so, again, big leaf networks, prioritization, quality, and failover. If I was summing it up for someone technical such as yourself, it's, we can tell you what services are available, how those services are performing, and then dynamically switch you to whatever's available and whatever's going to give you the best experience at any moment in time. And that's essentially what the business does. It's not a very expensive product. It's, a couple hundred dollars a month to get it deployed. And so we work a lot with businesses that have lots of locations. So think of a tire shop that's running their entire business on cloud point of sale, that kind of thing. And we have a lot of, so we have lots of locations, a mattress store, lots of locations. You want to keep the on-premise piece very light. So anything that you can do above store, cloud technologies, that becomes very attractive. And we facilitate that. So it's a super cool business founded by a guy named Joel Mulkey, who's an awesome guy and still sits on the board. And yeah, it's we've got about 75 people in the business, and we're about a $20 million company.
Well, you have a lot of experience, and one of the things you have experience in is safety in the workplace. So talk to the listeners about that and explain to them about your unique experiences as it regards to safety in the workplace.
Yeah, so that I do have a lot. I have a lot of perspective there. I don't necessarily know that I would have a lot of experience, but and this story tends to come up when I get into these types of conversations. So early in my career, I had an event. In 1995, one of my employees, and an employee that I was somewhat close to, came into a business that my brother and I owned and killed two of my employees and shot a third. And it was a devastating blow, both professionally and personally. So, one of the girls that was killed, she was shot in my office. She was on my phone. She was a close friend of mine. She was my sort of alternative date. My wife and I were dating at the time. Stephanie would be, the person I would go to a concert with or that kind of thing if my wife wasn't available. She was a close friend of ours. And so, I went through a personal sort of loss, and it was very difficult. It was very difficult for my brother, but also at the same time was going through a very much. I was a young man. I had, there was debt involved. We had this business, that a lot of people, my family was kind of dependent on it. Obviously, my brother and I, both of our families were dependent on it, and so I sort of, stood at the crossroads of both personal, trauma, and professional trauma at the exact same time as a very young man. And it had a lasting, as you would expect, it had a lasting impact on me as we started to recover that business. So the first thing we had to do is get over the, the shock and get back on whatever footing was available to us. But then I had to repair the business side of that. In addition to my sadness for Stephanie and the loss of life and the senselessness of that, there was also this need to build a business that could support the needs of everyone that was still alive and that still depended on this place to work. In other words, I couldn't give up. So I had to create an environment of where productivity mattered on the heels of something traumatic. So just think about, in a restaurant, the quality of the food is really important, but it's really not that important right after a couple of people were killed. And so how do you transition from the, that one to the other? Because at the end of the day, 2 weeks later, quality of the food's important again, and the way that this business runs and the operation and all that stuff has to go on. And so, so I had to sort of think through, I had to metabolize my own trauma and figure out how do I get myself working again? How do I get myself on sure footing? And then I also had to do the same thing for a relatively large staff. And so what, and then, sort of overarching all of that was my recognition that it was time for me to get out of the restaurant business and go find something that had a little bit less risk and a little more upside. And so, so over a 2 year period, so 95, 96, really to 98, 99, I got very comfortable and very familiar with what's the environment that in which people will perform. And so, and basically where I landed was, people, if people don't feel physically safe, then they're probably not going to perform well. And there's a couple of examples, that are less dramatic, maybe, but a divorce would be an example of a situation where people may not feel safe. That might not be the best example of a physical safety, but certainly somebody that's fighting cancer, for instance, that it's very difficult for them to metabolize that and to focus on work. So if you're not physically safe, chances are you're not going to perform at a high level. Professional safety, and this sort of took a little bit longer to, before I started caring about anything other than the physical safety of folks. But, again, sure, you have to operate and run and run your business. And so this concept of professional safety, I am confident in that what I'm doing is consistent with what I'm good at, and it's the right thing for me to be doing professionally. And if people are uncertain about that, think about, in transition or moving from one job to another, it's very difficult for people to stay on task and stay focused. Intellectual safety, and this one's really important. I think of creative teams where this really, really resonates. But you have to create an environment. If people don't feel like they can speak their mind, then and people don't feel like they're in a safe place to represent their interest, if you will, then they're not going to perform very well. And then kind of last but not least, there's this concept of financial safety. So if people don't feel as though, if the workforce doesn't feel as though they're financially safe, you're going to miss payroll. Those kind of things, then all of those things lead to low performance. And I had all of those happening, again, as a pretty young person with a relatively, young and inexperienced workforce, because these are, in a lot of cases, college folks. But it latched on. I need to create, a physically safe environment. The doors need to be locked. We need to make sure that what happened here can never happen again. People need to know that, hey, this business is going to survive, and we're going to do what we need to get the business on sure footing. I'm interested in what everyone has to say. I'm interested in how you're recovering from this. And, if we think we're not going to make it, and we think that the business isn't going to be able to survive this event, you all will know well in advance. And the better I became at transferring, those sentiments and those feelings to the workforce, the better and better that we performed. And so as I moved out of the restaurant business, and which is awesome, by the way, that I think everyone should train in an economy as fast as the restaurant business. The whole buy-sell relationship, the customer interaction takes about 45 minutes. You're going through that 45-minute economy hundreds of times during a lunch shift. And so you really become pretty fast on your feet as it relates to how to run a business, how to deal with people, how to buy, how to sell, how to execute, how to deliver, how to communicate. So I love that business for that. However, I moved on and got into technology and into technology sales at first in 2020, and then on into executive management, kind of along that journey. So and a lot of what I do professionally is I'm coming into businesses that are, someone founded this business and it's on its way. They go out and they get private equity or venture capital funding, and then something happens. Either the entrepreneur doesn't have the skill set to do the next thing, people get tired, and the business isn't performing well. And that tends to be the time when I step in, when I step into the business. So the first thing that I need to do is get people performing. And so this concept of, what I learned at Callender's Restaurant and Bar in 1995 really lent itself to my management style as I sort of moved through, as I moved through my career. Now, I know that people aren't going to perform well if they're not physically safe. I know that they're not going to perform well if they're not intellectually safe. If they don't trust that they're in the right role doing the right thing, or that I'm not managing the business in such a way that we're going to be able to withstand swings in the market and those kind of things, then people are going to look over their shoulder. And what I want them to do is, I call it ears pinned back. I want them to focus on moving forward and not worry about that. And so to the extent that I can create that sort of environment, that's where I get, high performance yield from the workforce. And that's sort of has been what has defined my management style over the last 20 years. So you follow that, Chris?
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about how the lack of trust among employees can hinder a company when it's trying to scale up and grow.
Yeah, so think if you don't know what you're looking for, then the chance that you're going to find it is pretty low. Sometimes you stumble across something and you sort of retrofit, wow, this is amazing. But generally speaking, the requirements for, hitting goals is understanding exactly what they are. So, the first thing that, that I think about is every business, every team, you need very clear goals, and those goals need to be effectively communicated. And that's that, without that, you sort of have nothing. And people need to trust in that. The second thing is the environment that you operate in, back to the safety topic, really needs, you need psychological and safety, and you need trust. And what I mean by that is you have to create an environment where people feel comfortable taking risks. You have to create an environment where people are comfortable sharing their opinions. And you have to create an environment. I'm sure you do a lot of this on the show. You have to create an environment where people are comfortable displaying vulnerability without the fear of retribution for that. And that's super important. And kind of beyond that, you need, in order to create a high performing environment, you really need a diverse set of skills, and you need to, increase, in artistic creativity, if you will, and you need accountability, you need healthy conflict resolution, and you need to celebrate wins. And so I think what's important, if you is that you create that environment where people understand that, hey, this is how we're going to operate. Absent that, more to the point that you asked, what you end up with is distracted workforce and low productivity. And again, go back to the goals thing. If people aren't clear on goals, then they ask a lot of questions. When they ask a lot of questions, you burn a lot of calories answering questions over and over again and trying to keep people aligned against the goals. So what I encourage is you really need a transparent, fixed set of goals that everyone understands, and you need to move toward that. And then all the other things I mentioned become, supporting table stakes in support of hitting those goals.
Okay, everybody, it's Michael E. Cullen II.
And I'm Sesame Incarta from the All Too Real 2 podcast. We're passionate about movies, TV, and pretty much all things pop culture.
Dive into the chaos of failed sitcoms, direct-to-video sequels, and the quirky realms of cinema and TV.
Join us every Thursday for your dose of All Too Real 2 entertainment.
We'll guide you through debates like whether Howard the Duck qualifies as a superhero.
Ponder if Larry the Cable Guy could be the new Rock or Schwarzenegger.
Discover if some shows and movies should have stayed in the cutting room.
Ever heard of a sitcom featuring that dictator with the funny mustache? Well, we watched it.
We're dedicated to unraveling the peculiarities of pop culture, sometimes with awesome guests.
So, if you're into the eccentric world of pop culture,
listen and subscribe to All Too Real 2.
Available wherever you find podcasts
and on Age of Radio.
What advice would you give to business leaders, especially in the early stage of scaling and growth? What advice would you give them about the need to highly prioritize trust and safety among their staff and employees?
So the first advice I give to anyone, and I live by this because, a lot of times when I'm coming in, I'm sort of flat-footed and I'm just walking into the business and I need to find out what's happening. The first thing is, I would look to the corners of the business. What is it that's happening in, at the individual contributor level, down at the ground level in parts of the business that may not be obvious? Because in a lot of cases, that's where the talent lies. I'm always looking for people that are a lot smarter than they realize and a lot better than they realize. My advice, out of the blocks, number one would be go look for that and try to create connections with the entire organization and understand kind of, what is happening in the corners and where's the talent lie. The second thing is, it's important, and a lot of leaders struggle with this. My journey hasn't been paved with, blue skies and green lights and low friction. I've had to work for what feels like every step that I've taken. And through that, I've gained perspective, I think, and I've moved around a lot. I've worked in London. I've worked here. I've worked in the southern part of the country. My office is in Portland. I've worked in New York, Chicago. So I've been around a bit in terms of, different cultures. And I think what that's created is perspective. And I think that's important. And so, if you've been falsely accused of something, you can relate to someone that's going through being falsely accused. For instance, if you've been through a sickness or cancer or anything like that. And I bring that up because one of our executives is dealing with that today. When you go through these things, you understand how it feels to go through these things. Well, not everyone can experience everything. So what I encourage second from, looking to the corners of the business is gain the perspective and be realistic about what people are going through. If people don't know what to do, and if they're worried about whether or not the business is going to survive, and that they're not, and they don't trust that they can speak up, and they don't necessarily trust that the people around them are speaking up either, they're not going to perform well. And if you just spend a little bit of time thinking about that, of course not. What I can tell you, I've had things that have popped up in my life, strain, if you will. My parents, went through what felt like 7 years of slow death, if you will, as they were getting older. And that was very difficult for me. It was very difficult for me to stay on task. It's very difficult for me to stay focused. A lot of times I was losing both my parents. And so, gaining that perspective, not necessarily, look, the personal element of business is very important in it all. And most of my friends are people that I've worked with along the way. My wife and I worked together when we were in college. So it's all very personal. However, on the professional side, what people need to think, like, how would I respond if I were, again, insert something that targets the safety and well-being of the workforce. And then you need to adjust to that. So if you have an executive that's going through, again, I use divorce because it's so dramatic, but if that's going through something, understand that and then think through what the ramifications of that are going to be. Sort of less dramatic is, think through what how do people respond when they're not certain of what to do? I call it lining up. If you didn't have people would just wander around in the DMV if they didn't have order and a line to what they're doing, it would be chaos. And so, one of the things that I look for is what is our line, what is our order, and what are we moving toward? And we want to keep people aligned with that. If we don't have that, then we really set the stage for, lateral slippage. And what I mean by that is people are peeling out. They're starting to look to the left and to the right. They're looking over their shoulder. They're worried about themselves and that kind of thing. So, the headline, Curtis, is pay attention. Dial into what's happening in all parts of the business, and then be realistic with respect to perspective, and be realistic about how people are going to respond to current events. And then do your part as a leader to make sure that you're trying to foster an environment that has all of the attributes of high performance. Again, clear goals, trust and psychological safety, diverse skills that are apparent, accountability where you need it, conflict resolution that is healthy. And I mentioned before, but also an environment that celebrates wins, that reinforces that, hey, we're moving in the right direction and it's effective. So, that's the advice I give myself every day. So hopefully that resonates with some of your listeners.
Well, tell us about any current or upcoming projects that you or Big Leaf are working on that the listeners need to know about.
Well, so we talked about the concept of, I'm running a business. That business connects to the internet, and I need to run mission critical, high quality applications over this. Again, think of it as medical images and those kind of things. The environment is changing. So we have, number one, the mission critical nature of this internet connection is getting greater and greater and greater. And then, think about what happened yesterday. AT&T was down. I mean, there was a major outage. People couldn't process. A large percentage of the United States couldn't get prescriptions filled yesterday, and so outages are terrible. And so there's one of the things that's required here is what are our what else is available to us in terms of connectivity. So you think of things like Starlink. Think of things like our 5G and fixed wireless solutions. So the next thing for Big Leaf is really expanding our connectivity capabilities to be able to accommodate a different set of circuits, for instance, Starlink, or for instance, 5G, those kinds of things. And so we've been working on that project. I was fortunate enough to get connected with a gentleman who was the chief product officer for Verizon, their small business unit, a guy named Dave Idle. He joined the business about a little over a year ago, and he's driving us toward the next phase of our evolution. In parallel with that, we will update our user interface, which is a big meaty project that really sets us up to do some integrations in some areas that you'll find interesting. For instance, right now today, we're part of our value proposition is that we're security agnostic, and we don't force people to change their firewall and do those kind of things when we deploy. And that's been it's been a great deal for us. Well, in the future, and as we move forward, there are security things that we can add to our solution that probably would lighten, that will most certainly lighten the overall investment in the footprint required for this kind of distributed edge that we talked about. Again, the haircut, the dermatologist, those kinds of things. And so, we broader connectivity options, a more contemporary user interface with the ability to do a lot more integrations, as well as we start to deploy security features as we move forward. So I'm excited about where the business is and where we're going.
Well, so listeners can keep up with everything that you're up to, throw out your contact info.
What is my contact info? Is that the question? Sorry, Chris.
Yeah, throw out your contact info so
Yeah,
listeners
so
can.
I'm easy to find. You can find me on LinkedIn. Again, Greg Davis. And then my email address is gdavis@bigleaf.net. And I'd love to hear from any of your listeners that are interested.
Close us out with some final thoughts. Maybe if it was something that I forgot to talk about or that you would like to touch on, or just any final thoughts you have for the listeners.
Yeah. Well, I would encourage everyone to really think through, you know, performance and high performance, and what are the things that we need to do to get the group. And that group could be, it could be a team, it could be your workforce, it could be, you know, theoretically, you know, your friend group. Like, what does it take to get the group performing at the highest level, and then foster that, build that, in particular as it relates to running businesses. The best thing that you can do as a leader is get people to their goals, not be constructive about, you know, how they need to write emails or how they need to do things better. The best thing that you can do for the people around you is help them get to their goals. And the best way to do that is to create an environment that focuses on that. And so, again, if there's anything that I can do for your listeners to help people stay, you know, to lend my advice to people that are trying to build a higher and higher performing workforce, then, you know, I'm certainly here for that.
Absolutely, listeners. So contact Greg, Big Leaf, if you need anything from them. Please be sure to follow, rate, review, share this episode to as many people as possible if they need anything from Greg or Big Leaf. If you have any guest or suggestion topics, cjackson102@cox.net is the place to send them. As always, thank you for listening. And Greg, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Curtis. Have a great weekend.
For more information on the Living the Dream podcast, visit www.djcurveball.com. Until next time, stay focused on living the dream.